And then, yeah, I guess I can get started if you're okay with that. We'll see if people roll in here as we go along. But I will I'll mention to start our sponsor, the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Make sure you get one because I don't know if you've noticed, Torsten, but exchanges are getting liquidated. So I've been telling people to get a Bitbox because if it's not your keys, not your coin, which hey is I love that you use Andreas's line where in the movie where he sits there, not your keys, not your coin, not your coin, not your keys. You got it. Kept going over and over. So get yourself a Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Use the promo code Bitcoin Made Simple to get 5% off at shiftcrypto.ch/Bitcoin Made Simple. And also, it's brought to you by Movies Plus because that is where you can watch the movie Cryptopia, Bitcoin, Blockchains, and the Future of the Internet, made by Torsten Hoffman, the filmmaker that we have on the show today. And also Bitcoin, The End of Money as We Know It. That is his first Bitcoin film. And yeah, you can use the same promo code Bitcoin Made Simple, and you get 1 year of Movies Plus for $2.1 a month. Wink, wink, 21, anyone? So yeah, you can check out the movie and you can see more because I know that Torsten says he has more stuff going up. But Torsten, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Corey. This is great. Am I muting and unmuting myself, or do you mind if I just have the microphone on? There's a little bit of background noise here, but hopefully it's not too bad.
Oh no, you can keep it on. That's totally fine. I don't hear any background noise, so you
If
should
it
be
gets
good.
bad, I will let you know, but it sounds fine for now.
Okay, thanks, Phil.
So, Torsten, I gotta start with your filmmaking background and how did you get into making movies and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So I was basically, as everyone, going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole at one point or another, right? And for me, that was the year 2013. And I was just a little bit luckier than maybe some others, because everybody who first reads about Bitcoin obviously thinks it's a scam and, it can't be real and it must surely die soon, or it's a bubble, all these things. But I had actually written at my university something about fiat currencies and paper script money, local monies as alternative currency. So I was a little bit pre-briefed and was just fascinated by it. And when I went down that rabbit hole 2013, 14, I thought, wow, okay, so, some people write a book, some people start a blog or a podcast. And for me, it was let's make a documentary. And that was 2014, which then came out in 2015. It's called Bitcoin, The End of Money as We Know It. And yeah, that was my start. I'd worked with other documentary makers before, but that one was really my debut as a producer director.
So, did you have like an interest in movies growing up and you were just always fascinated by it, or did you ever have aspirations of getting into it in a career sense?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of people are fascinated by movies and love to watch entertainment and things like that. For me, it was actually more of a logical move because I was already in the industry. So I was in the media industry for a while, and my company was working with dozens of filmmakers, documentary filmmakers, actually, from all around the world. And I was helping them with distribution. So I didn't come from the creative side. I came from the business side, which maybe explain which can maybe explain why both of them have done quite well in international distribution. Like festivals and all these platforms and broadcast deals. That's sort of like my background.
Yeah, no, I could kind of sense that because obviously I have the same background. So I was like, I think he's like a little savvy here. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to distribution, which most people have no idea what's going on behind the scenes when it comes to distribution. So awesome. So your intro to Bitcoin, I mean, that's pretty interesting that you like, because like you said, most people think it's a scam. And I thought the same thing. I was like, it's going to get hacked. Like what a dumb thing to
Exactly.
think. It's interesting that you're back, that you had the background in studying currencies, because I think there's a common thread that if you understand that the currencies are a scam, you pretty much get Bitcoin right away.
Yeah, I think that's such an astute point, Corey, because yeah, it is a matter of fact, and people are realizing that now that our fiat system is a scam, and literally it's a scam, like the printing out of thin air and things like that. And yeah, if you have that background, it's maybe easier to kind of look into Bitcoin a little bit. But of course, I mean, I'm also not technical, I'm not a software guy, so it took me a while. And maybe looking back, maybe I shouldn't have made a film and should have invested in Bitcoin a bit more. But look, I mean, I was lucky to be early, and the first film did quite well. It got me started. And then a couple of years later, Cryptopia, which is the current film out. I mean, that was really a much bigger production, very much more ambitious, much more wide sweeping, and it's done phenomenally well as well.
Talk about that a little bit of like what the challenges are of an indie filmmaker, whenever, you know, maybe comparing the production of the Bitcoin End of Money as we know it in Cryptopia, you know, because like they are on different scales. So they had the production life had to have been a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean the first one. So Bitcoin, the End of Money, and when people watch it, I mean this is really it's sort of like you can a student trying to explain Bitcoin in different chapters and the history of money and things like that. And we used a lot of third-party footage, you know, that you acquire from footage data and banks to you know make the story visually interesting. So it's sort of like an amateur first-time attempt at filmmaking, but again, it has done very very well. And people were interested in the topic of Bitcoin in the summer of 2015-16. It went well, and in Cryptopia, I think you would agree, is like a properly produced, not big budget, but medium budget documentary. I went to four, produced on four continents, I believe. We had a good 3D animation budget, and it's I think very much well, much better told, you know, as a storyteller as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not saying that the other one isn't told well, but I totally agree. I mean, you can see the maturation in your filmmaking skills and everything like that, and it's you know quite natural and looks it looks great. And the 3D animation is great. I mean, that's my nerdy film side like of things that I really enjoy. But what was the goal of each movie, and how did they differ?
Yeah, I mean, the first one really satisfied my own curiosity to learn about money, what money is, and what Bitcoin may or may not, you know, add to that. And I had the ambitious title of The End of Money as we know it. And Cryptopia is really, look, 5 years later, what has happened to the industry? It's now 100 times larger. There's many more things other than Bitcoin. I'm still a hardcore believer in Bitcoin. And maybe during these days, these weeks, you know, people become a bit more maximalist. But I mean, no doubt about it, there's a lot of innovation happening outside of Bitcoin and interesting people and stories and scams to cover. So it was more like, okay, let's see what else is going on in the industry. Let's tell the story of the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, and so one of those scams is Roger Ver, and I gotta say, it's just like I like your presentation of Roger in the movie. You know, you give him a fair shake, but I like the visual, like when he's walking away, like it was just like I don't know if this was your aim, but it like the view of him walking away, I like felt like it was just him slipping into obscurity and like kind of like realizing that like everything like he did was like falling apart. Was that done by design?
Yeah, I wouldn't say so. I mean, obviously, there's a little bit of hints throughout the whole film, and when I talk to people, same with Craig Wright. I mean, even stronger. But still, I mean, at the end of the day, I am not a financial advisor. I am not looking at the code, right, or like making strong statements like that. And
Yeah.
the Bitcoin Cash, you know, in 2018, I believe it was. People like to forget the scaling war. It wasn't really. It wasn't clear that small blocks is the way to go. And looking back, yes, it was clearly the way to go. And the market has decided. I always said in all these interviews, the market will ultimately decide. And, you know, and 99% of the market cap is BTC, and you know, less than 1% is Bitcoin Cash. But at the time, you know, it was a debate. And I disagree with the characterization of some maximalists who say, look, it was a scam. I think it was a worthwhile try, which clearly didn't work out. And you can just look at the price.
Yeah, I mean, I think Roger, you know, we can thank him for what he did to help launch Bitcoin. And from my view, I think he just got so hung up in the payments narrative, you know, because I mean, now you have things like the Lightning Network that can accomplish everything that they were complaining about. So it's funny to me that people, you know, no matter how innovative they are at the beginning, like I think the trick of Bitcoin. Or the biggest challenge is to see if you can be there at the end. Because like at some point everybody's all in on Bitcoin, and then like can you hang in and not get distracted? So what do you think? I mean, since you got to interview Roger and spend a decent amount of time with him, I mean, what are his feelings? So at the time you made this, it was 2018. So or was that 2018 when you interviewed him?
Probably, yeah. I've seen him a couple times throughout the years, but so including 2014, and then 2017, 18, maybe 19. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so I mean, is he, you know, resign? Like, is he still just stuck on the Bitcoin Cash, or is he resigning to the fact that maybe it's failed? Do you think, or you know, what do you think vibe you got from him? I mean, is there anger towards the Bitcoiners, or is he just kind of like throwing up his hands at this point and saying it is what it is?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's been 3 years, right? And those 3 years have really shaped the narratives. Time is the ultimate decider. What is the Nassim quote? There's some sort of like time will tell whether something is fragile or anti-fragile, right? And look, at the time, I think your characterization earlier was 100% spot on. He got hung up on that one narrative, the payment narrative. That was his thing. And he just believed that a hard fork is the right way to go. And then obviously he went into the next war, the next split with those guys from BSV. It was a total disaster. It was basically a high stakes poker game that ultimately was lost. But I don't know what he's doing now. I think he disappeared from social media for a year or even longer. I'm not quite sure what's he up to now.
Yeah, I mean, can't blame him for disappearing from social media, because I think we kind of should all do that. And I say that with full irony, recording this on Twitter Spaces. So, one of the things that you explored in the second movie, which is it fair to call it a sequel, would you say, or are they two distinct separate movies?
I think they're two distinct movies, but I always like to point out, look, 5 years earlier, we already covered Bitcoin. Look, we were early, and look what has happened since then. But there's two standalone movies, because they're so different, right?
So Room 77 in Berlin, which, first of all, by the way, I've been to Berlin because of being a filmmaker. So, like, I've been to the film festival and the market and everything.
Yeah.
And that was unfortunately before I was a Bitcoiner, like a hardcore Bitcoiner. So I never got to go to Room 77. But next time I'm in Berlin, I'll be going there. Do they still accept Bitcoin? And what was it like there?
Yeah, so unfortunately, it has closed down. A couple of years ago, I read the news that the owner has finally shut down the business. I don't know what the exact reasons were. I guess COVID, or maybe it was slightly before COVID. So unfortunately, you missed that. But it's a legendary place. And, we have this quote in the film from another Berlin-based entrepreneur who basically said, well, somebody wanted to buy beer and burgers with Bitcoin. And that's why he developed the first mobile wallet. And that must have been, I don't know, 2011, probably. So it wasn't the first ever Bitcoin transaction, which was the famous pizza, and I think there's the alpaca socks after that, but it would have been very, very early, and definitely the first mobile transaction, mobile wallet. So it just shows you how the future of technology is not designed by within boardrooms or some, like, I don't know, developer calls. Sometimes it's a guy who wants to buy a beer, right? I find that fascinating.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think one of the things I like about it is the charm of that room, and I mean, this happens, you see this more in Europe than you do in America, where we're stuck in like our corporate, big box store type, generic buildings, where over in Europe, you go to these places and you're like, you look around, like I'm sure if you were sitting in Room 77, you're like, I could picture this place existing like 600 years ago, like with the candles and kind of the like old school setting. And so it's kind of funny to me that like the first mobile transaction of a like first mobile wallet used was used in a place like that that probably could have been around for 500 years.
Yeah, the other related thought to this is that Berlin is very important for the crypto economy as a whole, and for Ethereum especially. And part of the reason is that it's a very cheap place to live. That's why a lot of entrepreneurs and young, hungry people go there. A lot of innovation happens there. But it's also very anarchist. So I mean, there are literally street blocks that are kind of occupied, and because people don't want to pay rent. I don't know what exactly. It's a very rugged anarchist city, which is interesting because crypto anarchy and the manifestos are kind of from that same philosophy in a way, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I mean there's a weird like feel to Berlin, like a vibe. I mean, it's good, but you can almost feel what happened there in the past. And like I stayed there one time. The hotel that we stayed in was literally part of the Berlin Wall. Like it was one of the buildings that like people would try to climb through to get to the other side. And it was just this like eerie feeling, because like then you walk out and you're like, oh, I'm on the good side. And then you go like, I mean, you just walk across this little barrier and you're like, you could just, I don't know, you could feel it. And obviously too, like the fact that you can see the difference from space, it's kind of interesting with technology, when they use different type of light bulbs on the eastern side versus the western.
And Sorry to interrupt you there, but I think it is a very good point, because a lot of Zoomers don't realize that for, 50 years or something like that, the world was divided into East and West, and that Berlin Wall was literally, the dividing line. And again, something that that oftentimes we forget. I'm being German, you're American, people around the world have different experiences with money, and that Argentinian story is another one, right? Wences is one of the very, very early Bitcoiners, smart and hardcore Bitcoin and not crypto kind of person. And, in his past and his family's past, he lost all his the family's wealth multiple times, because they are used to hyperinflation and confiscations and things like that that are totally alien to us and strange to us.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, it comes to people so naturally that have lived through the hyperinflation. And I loved his story in the film, because his perspective is so pure, he lived through it multiple times. We live in this sheltered world where we think, COVID has kind of brought a lot of that down, the veil down for people, I think. But before that, it was like, oh, we live in, a hunky-dory world. Everything's fine. Nothing bad ever happens. That was in these, books that I read in school, And then it's like, well, no, that was, real stuff that really happened. And we are, in the grand scheme of the world, that happened pretty recently, And then there's slavery that still exists in the world, those types of things. And you're like, wait a minute, I thought we got rid of that. Me being a dumb American, it's like, oh, I thought slavery was, done away with after the Civil War. It's like, well, no, yeah. Here it was, but not other places in the world.
And maybe that starts, people start to realize that when it affects their pocketbook, right? And now with the price of gas per gallon up and the mortgage payment about to double, and inflation to hit double digits, and more talk about the Fed and the trillions that are being printed out, all these things that seem to slowly crack wide open, the perceived reality, and everything was good and fine, and now we in the West are. Realizing that it's a more fragile place, right?
Yeah, it's a much more fragile place than we realized. Talking about, you brought them up, but the Swiss bunker, tell people a little bit about that and what they can expect to see in the movie if they haven't seen it before.
Yeah, and again, hopefully you can direct some of the listeners and on Twitter people to the right website to sign up to see the movie. So the famous Bitcoin bunker is in Switzerland, and I'm not allowed to disclose the real location. But even if I were, it's only 1/5 of the Bitcoin private keys are in there. So basically, it's the cold storage facility for some of the largest holders of Bitcoin. Back then it was still owned by Zappos, which is the company that Argentinian is running. And it's fascinating to see how much physical effort and lift down into the mountain and down, and there's nuclear grade doors. It's a bunker from the wartime era, and that's being repurposed to be an ultra secure data storage place, right? And the ultimate irony is, of course, that the servers down in the bunker are not even connected to the internet, because that's possible. Vulnerability, right? But even if you can break into there, which is obviously impossible, you still need to go into 5 different places and 5 continents and at the right time to get into the private keys. So it's basically a foolproof system, they told me.
I mean, it's fascinating. My best friend from college and roommate, he is from Switzerland, and the first time I went over with him, we were touring, going through the Alps and all that kind of stuff, and he said something to me there is so many secrets in these mountains. And I thought he was kind of talking mystical, there's so many secrets in this mountain. And he was like, no, literally in the mountains. And I was like, what do you mean? And then he pointed, and you could see this gated entrance to the mountain in the side. And I was like, what? And so I was fascinated by that part of the movie. I mean, what was it like on the inside? Did you feel like you were in an airtight space that you could be it looked like a Bond film almost?
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt like. Exactly. The people were friendly, and the security professionals are obviously very strict with us and searching through all our stuff. No, that was fine. But the other story about the Alps is back to the Cold War era. to prevent a marching army to, you know, run into over your country quickly. There were literally nuclear bombs positioned inside the highways that are the bridges connecting, you know, one tunnel to the next, and then there's a bridge. And to make sure there's no army coming through, you can blow up these these bridges. So yeah, I think that's maybe what he was referring to, your friend.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a key piece, and what a great defense from any storming army. I mean, you don't get much better than the Alps. Do you think so? They don't have customers anymore. Did they close down, or are they still active?
So the way I understand it is that Coinbase acquired their institutional storage or cold storage facility and business, and Xapo, I think, is concentrating on end consumers, especially in emerging markets. I know they're very strong in South America, and I think Turkey is what he mentioned to me. So these places that already are into much higher inflation numbers are the ones where the Bitcoin adoption is the highest, and that's why I think what he's focusing on.
Okay, yeah. Unfortunately, he sold it to Coinbase, so that's maybe why they're able to rehypothecate things so much, because they have it in such deep security that nobody can ever find out. And you said there's 1/5 of the private keys are in the mountains.
Yeah, so there's 5 of these facilities on 5 continents, and it's 1/5 of each private key is in one. I don't know what the system is, 3 or 5 or 4 or 5, you know, the multi-sig logic. And again, they're not connected to the internet, so they have figured out a way how to, put those data on those keys in and out manually, right? So if you request, that was back then, if you request your Bitcoin in cold storage, it might take a day or two because it's a very manual and highly secure process.
It's a great way to make you we tell people to, you know, we have the Bitbox as our sponsor, so we tell people to get their keys off there. And I always say it's a good way to stop you from panic selling your Bitcoin. If you have it on a Bitbox, you know, you have to go find your Bitbox, you have to get it out, you have to put in your keys, you have to move them. But what better way to save yourself from panic selling than having them in the Swiss Alps, where there's, you know, 2 days worth of entropy between when you can request them,
you know,
and when you can get
this
them.
This is such a good point for beginners, especially because throughout the years, I've heard this many times that, oh, I found an old wallet, or I wished I had kept my keys, or I don't know, I lost all my coins on some exchange, and I think it's so easy, like. A lot of these mobile apps and exchanges, they almost are designed to make you trade. And I mean, trading is a difficult game. I would be terrible at it. And most people lose most of their coins with trading, trying to time the market. This is the bottom. That's not the way. The way is to keep it, to hodl it, or to dollar cost average it. And I'm pretty sure you agree with me on that one.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't ever recommend people trading because... Yeah, that's a quick way to lose. I mean, like 99% of the people, even more than 99%, I'm positive, cannot successfully trade. So it would be a wise decision to not trade. I mean, any kind of cold storage, and it had to have been pretty cold storage down there. I mean, the temperature had to be pretty low, right?
Yes, for sure.
Another thing I wanted to bring up was your segment on the mainstream media, which, first of all, I thought, you know, just to give you some accolades, I thought you presented it really well of how the mainstream media, you showed like 8 different people talking at the same time about the, you know, Bitcoin and being completely confused by it and everything, and kind of confusing the viewer. So, you know, what did you want to accomplish with that? And what do you see as the problems with the mainstream media and how they cover Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think that's maybe another good learning for beginners. You know, when you look at CNBC or any of these news outlets, or even crypto news newsletters or whatever, I mean, a lot of times what's happening is journalists trying to explain or trying to find a reason why this market move happened right? Because that's how it is. First the price moves, and then a narrative shapes around it. If you could really tomorrow this is will happen and Bitcoin will go up or down $1,000, you would be a billionaire. You could use that knowledge, but that's not how it works. And so basically a lot of that financial journalism is really dumb content. So there's no point in even looking at that. And I think in my film, I have those six or eight different people saying, you know, Bitcoin is the greatest thing or the worst thing. And, you know, it went up because of this or that. It's like, you know, you have to zoom out. You have to have a different time preference. And again, hodlers are ultimately the winners and the ones that don't get nervous in times like these, just this week and last week.
Yeah, definitely. And Phil, I think you have a question.
Yeah, just a comment in a way. I just think it's aggravating because a lot of journalists try to be very objective in their reporting, and understandably so, but to the point to where they won't own Bitcoin itself. And I feel like, again, if you want to understand Bitcoin, the best and only way is to actually understand what you own. And you can still approach it objectively, you know? I mean, I guess it kind of throws a wrench in there because if you look at it as an investment, you want it to keep going up. But like, again, the best way to understand why it's going down is to, I guess, somewhat have that bias in owning it. So did you kind of realize that aspect of this while you were making these docs at all? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, this is a very good question. A very good question, actually. You know, in a way, Cryptopia is structured around these narratives, right? So the narrative of, digital gold, or the narrative of be your own bank, or a smart contract platform, and all these, you know, dozens and dozens of different narratives. And some of them make sense. Some of them are just marketing lingo for, you know, a new crypto network or something. Some of them die. I mean, stock to flow, that whole thing was highly attractive to me. I loved it, but I mean, the model was wrong, right? So maybe there will be a rebrand later. But I think it's just also like good for us to kind of take a step back and think, okay, why did I actually buy? What did I believe back then? And cross off a few of the list. Because the same thing happens over and over. So with Ethereum is another one. Like in my film, Cryptopia, I was talking about Ethereum and that Ethereum has some trouble at the time, right? And then I'm showing five or six logos saying, okay, these are the current Ethereum challengers who claim to build a better, faster, whatever. And those five logos, you don't hear about these networks or these coins anymore. Now there's five different challenges, right? And in 6 months' time, there's another five. And everybody wants to build a more efficient Bitcoin or more, I don't know, bigger blocks or whatever. And all that doesn't really matter. And it's good to double check your logic, I believe.
Yeah, it's good to, I mean, kind of revisit and make sure that you're, you know, as I say, people say it all the time, the thesis hasn't changed. And it's kind of good to, like, I think it hardens you into more of a Bitcoin maxi. And, you know, with all the things blowing up around us, it's like, hey, maybe it was, you know, maybe people weren't being toxic. Maybe they were just actually trying to help you and make you avoid scams. So, you know, it is interesting. I mean, what do you think is ultimately going to happen to Ethereum? Because I think Vitalik just recently said something like he always sees it as being an alternative, which is, I'm like, oh, okay, like that's, I don't, what's, what about the flipping? I thought you guys would flip Bitcoin. And
that is funny. I noticed that too. And didn't he come back closer into the Bitcoin camp with some of his recent comments as well? Look, but I mean, he has, I don't know. Let's not get started with Vitalik. But to be honest, I'm relatively bullish on Ethereum, and I don't think it's a problem for Bitcoiners, or it's an anti maximalist should be upset about it. I mean, Bitcoin is its own thing. It's digital gold, and if we play our cards right, in the inflation scenario, more and more people will understand, you know, fiat money is a scam, and, you know, Bitcoin is the way. Hopefully, that's what we hope, that's what I'm betting on. And Ethereum's promises something completely different, right? Whether it's smart contract, we don't really hear much about it anymore. DeFi was in last summer, I believe. Now DeFi is kind of crumbling apart. NFTs was a couple months ago. I think that is also now falling apart. I don't know what the legit use cases of Ethereum will be, but I think it's probably going to work out for them. There's so much brand power and companies behind it. I would be more worried about the other 50 coins that try to be the next Ethereum or trying to be the better Bitcoin. I think that is just mostly scams and nonsense.
Yeah. I don't think that Ethereum is really a threat to Bitcoin. I think it tried, but yeah, that narrative is gone, because really, I mean, everybody says it, but TikTok next block, you know, it's going to continue to keep churning out blocks. And it's funny because I kind of shared this on Twitter recently, and I started mining Bitcoin, and I was like, you know, it's funny, all the crazy things that go on and all the narratives and everything. And like, you go down and you look at your miner and you're like, that thing just is running. It just keeps going. It just keeps adding blocks. It keeps adding transactions and processing. And it's just, you know, I don't know.
And at the same time, you have Solana that has to be rebooted and breaks down every once in a while, or some other crypto thing that we find out runs on Amazon Cloud and, you know, has like a single point of failure. I mean, look, what I would say is maybe this. If you want to speculate, and that goes back to the trading, yes, sure, there might be this week or next week or maybe over a year a better performer. Yeah, I mean, Solana performed very well. But I mean, that is speculating. That is, I mean, risking a lot. Whereas I think what we're talking about with Bitcoin is like a long-term generational bet, right? You're in it for 5 years, for 10, for 20 years maybe. And I think you could make the same argument possibly for Ethereum. It's a long-term bet. It's risky. It's a different thing. But all these other hundreds of projects, it's just speculation. I know it keeps people busy. It keeps all these exchanges. Coinbase probably makes more margin on all these traders and all these different coins than on a Bitcoin hodler, right? So I understand why this is happening. Let people lose some money, and at the end, every cycle will create more maximalists. It really is the case.
Yeah, I noticed that when Luna was, you know, blowing up, and there were people on Twitter just, you know, coming in saying, I am now a Bitcoin maximalist. I was wrong, and I'm glad that I didn't have to learn that way, because it looks pretty bad and unfortunate for a lot of people. But so I wanted to also ask you, what do you think? What's your next Bitcoin movie going to be if you haven't already started it? Where does the Bitcoin journey take you as a filmmaker?
Yeah, it's a good one. So I'm currently in production of my next feature documentary, but it has nothing to do with the crypto economy at all. Nothing to do with Bitcoin. Nothing to do with economics or Bitcoin or money. So that one will be different. But I'm very sure that I'll revisit this space again and meet all my friends. And some of them will be ultra rich, and some of them will be regretting their choices for sure. So I don't know. I mean, look, I still haven't really looked into mining. Mining has always fascinated me from the start. I shied away from it because it was complicated, or because I thought it's not really consumer friendly, like these big server farms. And so I never got into it. But I think it is getting more relevant now with the energy transformation, right? People will start to realize that Bitcoin is actually good for the environment. So that's a good angle. Also like Lightning, that might be something to look at in the future. I'm a believer in it. I'm not a user, but I'm a believer in it long term. I don't know, man. I'll follow what you guys are doing and check what kind of interesting stories you're covering as well.
Yeah. I think I would definitely want to have a Zoom call with you. If you're available right after we do this interview, we could hop off Twitter and go to Zoom, because I just had a couple questions, and we'll keep those, private. I would love for Movies Plus to partner with you. I mean, you were one of the first movies that I wanted to get on. We had to launch and build our app and all that great stuff, you know. So I don't want to say jump the gun, but I always want to do like the really exciting things first. But then I have to do all the stuff where it's like, oh, I have to build an app and launch it and get it out there. So then once I got the movies on, I was like, here we go. And I got to say, they're some of the most viewed content. Like, actually, we have 5 Bitcoin documentaries on Movies Plus now. 2 of them are yours. And then we have Bitcoin FUD documentary. We have the Satoshi Paulin just created Bond to Unbind about El Salvador.
Oh, yeah. I'm speaking to him next week. Yeah, I know him very well. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, so he, we put his up there, and then also the Great Reset and the Rise of Bitcoin. And I, like, honestly, all 5 of them are usually in our top 10 views. So it's just, there's an audience. And obviously, our customers have a little bit of a Bitcoin bend to them because... Mm. Like, I am the head of the company, and I'm a huge Bitcoin maxi. I'll email you after this if you're available, and we can maybe chat for a couple minutes. But I'm excited to see what else you get into. And so, talk about your next use. I know they're not Bitcoin related, but I did obviously look at your IMDb, and you have some pretty interesting stuff that you're working on.
Yeah. So we haven't really announced anything yet. It will take me at least 6 more months to produce and finish it. But I will make sure that everyone who's watched the first film will Cryptopia will hear about my next one. I think it'll be fun. There's you know, we are techies. We are interested in new innovation and groundbreaking stuff. I think people will like my new film, but it's not quite ready. There's no trailer. There's nothing really to announce. But I'm super excited. And look, it's also good to like step back from the space a little bit and then come back a couple years later. So that's what I intend to do. And to your earlier questions, a question about, okay, what would you want to cover? Maybe in 2-3 years' time, we can actually talk about how Bitcoin changes almost like the political system, like, you know, democracy, like sovereignty, like all these things that within the Bitcoin maximalist subculture exist already, right? And hopefully that will be mainstreaming more and more. I mean, that's super fascinating from a social, demographic, or psychological, philosophical point of view. That would be an interesting one to make as well.
I agree. I mean, I think it's always going to be a changing and evolving, and it's kind of fun to watch, you know, go back in time and watch the older Bitcoin documentaries and watch how things have changed, you know, and see how people are speculating about the future that you are currently living in, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, in 10 years it's going to be this.
And then they're completely wrong, but the price is still 100 times higher or something. Actually, let me connect you to Austin. Did you know his film Life on Bitcoin? He made it, I think, in 2014, traveled with his wife around the world on Bitcoin. He at least tried. So that one, or maybe 2013 even. So that one is now like almost 10 years ago. And I think the world has looked very different then. That would be a good one to rewatch too.
Yeah. No, please connect me with him because I'd love to get it. Up there and watch it, because I actually haven't seen that one. It's funny because all the Bitcoin ones are ones that I've watched elsewhere, and then I'm like, okay, I need that on Movies Plus, let's go. So I gotta get that. There's a couple interesting thoughts for documentaries that on like mining, because I just had the guy Michael Schmid on, that he is turning his Bitcoin miner into his water heater. If you've seen him on Twitter.
Yeah.
And when I interviewed him, he said that him and his wife would go like to Colorado in their Airstream RV, and he would heat his entire Airstream with ASICs. And the crazy thing was that, like, you know, you pay for your campsite. So, you know, whatever it is, like 10 bucks a night or something like that, you know, and you don't pay for the electricity. And because it's powering RVs, like RVs have like the, you know, 220 capability. So like he was plugging in his Bitcoin miner and getting free electricity. So that's maybe Phil is going to do that. Like I could, Phil, I'm not lying. I actually had this thought where I was like, wait a minute, Phil's looking for a new place to live. Maybe we get Phil an RV and we have him go around and spend a year on the road mining Bitcoin for free on different campsites.
I love this, right? And then there's the others who are using the mining rigs to heat their house or heat their pool or something. I mean, it's just such crazy thoughts. And you know, soon enough, with all that solar thing coming online, it's also groundbreaking, I believe.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, Phil. That a hard pass, Phil?
That's gonna be a hard pass for me. Hopefully, I hear back from the realtor or landlord about a new place today. But no, that would definitely be a great little you know, behind the scenes, like dinging the life of somebody who's on the road in mining.
This is the stuff that if I had gotten into Bitcoin, I mean, it's probably good that I didn't get into Bitcoin whenever it first came out. Because it, you know, 2009, it was right before I met my wife. And I, honest to God, would have been the person that I would have done that in 2010. Like, I would have gone around and used electricity off of, like, I was not a nomad. It was nothing for me to, like, just hop on a plane and go to, like, you know, somewhere in the world by myself. And I enjoyed that. So I probably would have got completely sucked down that rabbit hole and lost something much more valuable than Bitcoin, which would be, you know, the wife and kids that I have now. So, but yes, part of me though, there's that like nature, that natural urge to be like, wouldn't it be great to just hit the road and live off the land? So I'm definitely gonna have to check out Life on Bitcoin. You have to connect me for sure. The innovation part is, I think, interesting. And that's, you know, some of what I want to talk to you about whenever we do a Zoom. But, you know, I plugged in my ASIC. And I immediately was, holy cow, I will no doubt be able to run my house completely on the heat in the winter. Like my furnace will not kick on, I promise. It just blows off so much heat. I think there's many innovations that are coming into the space, and that's probably what one of the next focuses should be. I want to open the floor. I don't know if anybody, we only have a couple in the audience, but if anybody wants to ask questions to Torsten, now's the time to hit that mic button and request to come up. If you don't, then, give it 30 seconds here, see if anybody's coming up. But Phil, I was really hoping that we could get you in an RV and just send you around the world a fulfilled life. That would have been a great title. Fulfilled life,
spelled with a PH. I'm not I'm more high maintenance than that. I can do it.
Torsten, I don't know if you know Phil, but he's got quite the hairdo, so I don't think it would I don't think the you'd be able to do that in the
Bitcoin. No, my hair like Bitcoin is anti-fragile. It can withstand all the elements.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, this has been fun. Let's be in touch. Corey, I can't do today, but we're connected on email. And thanks again. I think we're very much aligned. I hope that many of your users and subscribers will like my work. And let's catch up when I have my next one out.
Yes, absolutely. Everybody check out Bitcoin, the End of Money as We Know It, and Cryptopia, Bitcoin Blockchains, and the Future of the Internet. I got to ask you real quick before we go. You can check those out on Movies Plus. Use promo code Bitcoin Made Simple, and you get a subscription to Movies Plus for a year at the price of $2.1 per month for Satoshi Nakamoto. So were you afraid that you would get backlash for using the word Cryptopia? I mean, it's a great title. But the Bitcoiners, when they see the CRYPTO, they just kind of start to, like me, I start cringing. I'm like, no.
I know. Yeah. And what's even worse? Do you know that exchange, the New Zealand based exchange called Cryptopia, a lot of people lost all their coins there. It was sort of, I don't know whether it was a scam or a hack. And it was the same name, Cryptopia. And look, I mean, I've never understood like that word play. Is it crypto? Is it Bitcoin? If you're a Bitcoiner, then you're a Bitcoiner. That's fine. If you want to experiment with other coins or other networks or speculate on the market, that's fine. I'm not so hardcore about it, but you're probably right. I probably lost a couple of thousand of users had I changed a slightly different title.
I just thought that I thought that was a funny question I had to get out there because people were so averse to that. Torsten, thank you so much, and I hope we can connect here in the future, and everybody check out his movie on Movies Plus.
Thanks so much, guys. Talk soon.
See you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, man. Take care.
And thanks again to the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet from Shift Crypto, shiftcrypto.ch/bitcoinmadesimple to get 5%, and you can use promo code bitcoinmadesimple to get 5% off your hardware wallet. And Phil, thanks for coming up and helping out and everybody listening. And I hope you guys enjoy this. We'll talk to you next time. and helping out everybody listening. And I hope you guys enjoy this. We'll talk to you next time.